And we continue reading in 1 Samuel chapter 2. This is the song or the prayer that Hannah prayed and sang, probably. Let us hear her words. Then Hannah prayed, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. My strength rises up in the Lord. My mouth mocks my enemies because I rejoice in your deliverance. No one is holy like the Lord. No, no one except you. There is no rock like our God. Don't go on and on talking so proudly, spouting arrogance from your mouth, because the Lord is the God who knows, and God weighs every act. The bows of mighty warriors are shattered, but those who were stumbling now dress themselves in power. Those who were filled full now sell themselves for bread, but the ones who were starving are now fat from food. The woman who was barren has birthed 7 children, but the mother with many sons has lost them all. The Lord brings death, gives life, takes down to the grave, and raises up. The Lord makes poor, gives wealth, brings low, but also lifts up high. God raises the poor from the dust, lifts up the needy from the garbage pile. God sits them with officials, gives them the seat of honor. The pillars of the earth belong to the Lord. The Lord has set the world on top of them. God guards the feet of God's faithful ones, but the wicked die in darkness because no one succeeds by strength alone. The Lord's enemies are terrified. God thunders against them from heaven. The Lord judges the far corners of the earth. May God give strength to his king and raise high the strength of God's anointed one. This is holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. Will you join me in prayer? God, we thank you for this story that comes to us today, fresh. Stir in us, O God. Help us to hear what we need to hear from you. God, I ask that you would speak through me. I ask that you would speak in spite of me, that the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts would be acceptable to you. Amen. So today is the last Sunday before Advent begins. In the liturgical church calendar, this Sunday is called the Feast of Christ the King, or as many prefer to call it, including me, the Reign of Christ, the Reign of Christ Sunday. The Reign of Christ Sunday is a relatively recent addition in the church calendar. It was instituted by Pope Pius XI in 1925 for the Roman Catholic Church. The Pope instituted this feast day because the context was increasing nationalism and racism in the world. He instituted this feast day because he felt that followers of Jesus all around the world were being lured away from the vision of God's reign and were showing more allegiance to their own nation or to their own government's policies. So today is a day where we take time to ask that question, who is Jesus Christ in our lives? Is our allegiance to Jesus and his embodiment and vision of God's reign? If the answer is yes, then the questions follow. How does that allegiance play out in our lives? What changes for us if Christ is our King? Or if we don't like that language, what changes for us if Christ is our teacher or the way? If we proclaim that, what changes for us? How do we what changes in terms of who we consider to be our neighbors? What changes in terms of how we are in relationship to the earth, to the land? What changes in terms of how we think of our national borders? Who's in and who's out? What does it mean to claim Jesus as our King? These are critical questions because I imagine you as well today, have fears about the growing nationalism, fascism, racism, militarism, consumerism that is in our world today in 2018. Like Pope Pius XI, we may also worry about our Christian siblings around the world who seem to be lured by the powers and principalities of this world away from the vision of God's reign and the way of Jesus Christ. We may even be worried about ourselves. At times wondering, am I being lured away? Are we being lured away? Where I feel that most pulled away from the vision of God's reign in my life is in the area of despair and hopelessness. I struggle with that pull of apathy, of succumbing to numbness, wanting to isolate. Despair, hopelessness, numbness, and apathy are not marks of living into God's reign. On the contrary, they are often marks of the privileged in an empire of domination that wants to keep things just as they are. If people can become hopeless about change and succumb to numbness, then we will be silent and complicit in the face of injustice. And that works pretty well for bowing down to the status quo. How then will we resist being lured away by the powers and principalities? How will we stay awake and pay attention as the season of Advent will call us to? We need the voices of prophets in our midst, who are calling us to wake up, to take notice, and to watch. We need to hear their voices and listen and find our place in God's unfolding story. Today, I claim Hannah as one of those prophets. Hannah is a person on the margins of life. She bears a most distinguished mark of invisibility and insignificance in her context. She is barren. Barrenness was equal to social death. It was a social death sentence for women. Being able to bear children, specifically male children, was not just connected to your sense of self-worth. It had to do with every facet of your life, your entire economic well-being, your name, your respect, your ability to be remembered and honored, your legacy. Everything was dependent on your ability to bear children. And Hannah could not. The story reveals she is marginalized in her culture and marginalized even in her own family. She experiences verbal abuse from her husband's other wife, Penina. Her husband, Elkanah, clearly loves her and intends to be a comfort for her, and yet he says things to her in her grief that makes it clear that he's not quite sensitive to her suffering. Hannah, why are you so sad? Aren't I worth more to you than 10 sons? That's not exactly a helpful thing to say to someone in deep grief. Those of us who have experienced grief know what it means or feels like when somebody says something like that to you that just is not helpful. And in fact, sometimes it makes it worse and makes you feel more isolated and more alienated. So even with good intention, Hannah doesn't receive that support from her husband, not to mention his complicity in using his social power to do something to fight the conditions that are actually causing Hannah's suffering. But that's another topic for another time. The point is, Hannah is really on her own. She comes from the margins of family and of her community. And yet, she exemplifies a fiery spirit of self-advocacy and confidence. She pours her heart out to God in her anguish. She bargains with God. She knows She knows that Yahweh has the power to create new beginnings. And she is confident that Yahweh is the one who listens to her and cares for her and people like her who come from the margins of life. God does hear her anguish and responds. She becomes pregnant and will bear the child Samuel, who will become a prophet to his people. This birth is a cause for celebration because there's nothing routine about this birth. It's a new beginning born out of long waiting and barrenness and anguish. And so Hannah sings a doxology. She sings a song of praise. And really, it's not just sung by Hannah, but by all of Israel. Hannah becomes an icon of the Hebrew people who are able to join her because their story is one that involves long waiting, anguished prayers, but bold and defiant hope in a God who hears them and will gift them with a new beginning. Hannah's doxology becomes Israel's doxology. Now, you may have recognized that Hannah's prayer sounds strikingly similar to the song we hear Mary sing in Luke's gospel, Mary, the mother of Jesus. That's because it is strikingly similar. Mary's song of praise didn't come out of a vacuum. We often forget this, that Mary was connected to her spiritual ancestors. She had a people. She learned songs and knew these stories. And clearly, Hannah's song was a song she knew, and Mary adopted it as her own. And now, Hannah's song, which was Israel's song, which was Mary's song, is the song of the church. That is, if we dare to sing it. If we dare to put our trust in a God who has the power to transform, if we dare put our trust in a God whose reign poses a threat to our current government and our government's policies. Because the themes in these doxologies, they are sung by these marginal people, they are dangerous themes. They are unmistakably about the reversal of fortunes, the upside-down kingdom, if you will, which does not really sound like good news to everyone. The poor are lifted up out of the dust and the needy out of the ash heap. The hungry are filled with good things. The lowly are looked upon with favor. So far, that sounds pretty good. But then there's this. The rich are sent away empty. The powerful are brought down from their thrones. Those are harder themes to swallow. These themes pose a threat to our current social order. So to sing this song, we have to draw on the courage of Hannah. Her doxology, she throws it right in the face of the power of death. Hannah's doxology becomes her weapon of choice, rooted in imagination and God's promise of a new beginning and a new world and the reign of justice. We are invited to take up this song and throw it in the face of the power of death, to sing about a future that we can begin to live into today. And so on this Reign of Christ Sunday, where many of us are worried about the rise of nationalism and militarism, fascism, racism, and consumerism, we can sing this song too. This song is for those of us who are lured into hopelessness and apathy, numbness and despair. It's a song for us. If you find yourself in a space like that, like I do sometimes, this is the song we need to sing. This song will call us into Advent. It is a voice from the margins of life. It is the voice of a prophet. And singing this song will remind us of the bold faith of our ancestors who threw this song in the face of the power of death. So may we join Hannah today. Let us listen to her anguished cries from the margins of life. Let us join her bold prayers before God. Let us join her doxology, remembering who we are and whose we are, remembering who we serve and whose kingdom, whose vision we are called to serve. Amen. Amen.